Were you recently injured in a high-stakes curling match, skewered while broom stacking, or assaulted by a belligerent spieler?
Do you suffer from phantom shoulder, arm, and leg pain due to atrophy from being off the ice?
Do you yearn for the days of Golden Talk Radio? If so, call Stonecast.
It's KJR time.
Somewhere in the darkness, there's a man they call the Skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold. Weeks before the sun does, even though he'd rather stay in bed. Curses the cold in Minnesota. Why's it always so damn cold? He's got a job to do. Does it for me.
You're listening to Stonecast, Curling in the Twin Cities with Jordan Wickland and Christopher Lisney.
My dad's never missed a shot, still to this day.
Your dad is hilarious.
He has never missed a shot to this day. He's like, was I wide? I go, Dad, we backed up. I stopped at the first hog line when you let it go because I knew you were 2 feet wide. Like, I mean, like, were you wide? Of course you were wide, you know,
Dads don't make many errors.
No, they don't.
In my experience.
They don't. And, you know, in his defense, he's taken me to lots of steals and made me part of who I am today. But he has never missed a shot. Yeah. It had to have picked every time he misses. And he isn't getting any better in his 70s either, I'll tell you that. But he still throws pretty well and he makes a lot of shots.
A couple of years ago, I was practicing up in Blaine, and he's next door. I think he was like two sheets down, and he had got some new shoes or something, and he's like super gregarious. He comes up to me, he's like, I think I should know you.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh,
he's outgoing.
And then he told me all about you, and I think you had done an injury or he had an injury, he's like, this is the first time I've been on. I got new shoes. I was like, oh, thanks for all this information.
Yeah, my dad got hit by a drunk driver. I don't know if the guy was drunk because they ended up catching him, but he chased the guy down as he's, you know, got his car can barely work and he's driving after the guy. And so, it was, this is my dad for you. So I tell him I'm representing him, but you don't want the adjuster to know that it's your dad, right? Because they know you can't sue out your case against your dad. I mean, with your dad, because you can't have. You can't represent your dad, so you probably have to refer to a different firm, right? You just can't. It's probably not a good thing.
I want to say this is inside baseball lawyer stuff, but I think everybody knows this.
Yeah, right. And so I tell them, like, they know TSR. Most people don't know that it's Runin. So whatever you do, do not – he's going to meet with this adjuster, right, to show him he's got a kind of a shoulder thing, a winging thing in his shoulder from this accident. And I said, whatever you do, do not tell them that I am your son. And I had my partner Chuck go in with him, right?
Yeah.
And Chuck handled the case from the beginning because this was the whole plan, right? The first thing my dad says is, do you know my son Rich Runin? And I'm just like, oh, my God.
Hey-ho, here we go.
He's like, I'm going to have to go back to the vehicle. Like,
oh, my God.
Like text.
I wanted to high-five his face, if you know what I mean. Like, Dad, come on. I told the one thing you shouldn't say, you said in about a minute. Mm-hmm. So, and some people say we're, you know, the same guy. So
your dad, he's a key member, your family, but your dad is a key member of the, like, Twin Cities curling, like,
oh, yeah.
Old school.
Oh, yeah. You know those purple pants that he had for years? He's finally changed them, but those were from Bud Grant. Mm. True story. He went to, he got them from Bud Grant. They weren't Bud Grant's, but they were from the Vikings. He was at some sort of tour, you know, meeting with them and they gave him those pants. So he wore those for, I don't know, 30 years. I don't even know how they still worked. But, and he got the purple broom all wrapped up. And he's known as Purple Art. And back in the day, I got knighted by the Vulcans, the, you know, son of Purple. Or actually it wasn't the Vulcans. It was the court, the king and queen, because they nominate you.
That's bigger. That's a bigger deal.
Yeah,
much bigger.
Much bigger.
Big.
Much bigger. Big as it gets.
Tremendous.
Humongous. So I still have that. I have that frame somewhere. Big I don't
So I have we're running out of time, but I have a couple things that I want to make
time
sure
limit
we
on this thing?
Well, we have to somehow get this down to about 30 minutes.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
It's going to be hard. But
you can't do that. No, it's got to be an hour and a half. People got to hear what I got to say.
Oh, God. Yeah.
There it is. All right. Let's make it easy.
We've just get hit in. The maximum unsubscribes. No,
I think
so,
this could be your best podcast of all time. I mean, I've listened to some of them.
Do you hear this?
Oh, no.
Which one did you listen to?
I listened to a couple. I listened to the Richfield one from recently. I listened to fun. Mary Dews, who had I knew a lot of the same memories that she had. You know, about I didn't remember the piano upstairs.
That's
but
one
I remembered,
of the things I wanted.
I remembered
to bring
the crying room.
Yeah,
I remembered the kids really couldn't go upstairs unless they were in the crying room. You know, or the whatever you want to call it.
Nowadays, the crying room is an iPad. Put your kid on the couch with an iPad. That's the crying room.
Yeah, she's definitely right about like they scared us in juniors to like you got to clean the ice, and if you don't come down for the international and the cash spiel, to clean the ice, we weren't getting trophies. You know, she's right about that, and we also. I remember there's a foosball table downstairs and there were big tournaments all the time with the kids and, you know, so, but I think she was wrong in a couple things like, that, you know, junior curling, you know, the Mike Rugg started that. And I don't remember, she said something that I didn't think was quite right, but
she did say that they're in a head to head battle between you and John Benton, that John Benton would kick your ass.
Oh.
She said that. Didn't she say that?
Benton? Who is that guy?
I feel like this is a Stonecast sponsored event in the future.
I don't know. John and I have played a lot of times against each other, a lot of times with each other, and he's been one of my best friends for, you know, 35 years, something like that. So I love Johnny. You know, we get on each other's nerves a lot, like best friends do or good friends do. But, you know, overall, Johnny has been a great ambassador of the sport. And, you know, we broke up. And a year later, I went to Worlds.
You mean romantically?
Like over text?
No.
Was this hard?
We were on the same team in 2007, if I got the right year right. And then we decided to call it quits. And I went to the Worlds the next year, and he went to the Olympics the following year. So I would say it was a great move for both of us.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, although we should have went to the Olympics that year, not John. You know that, John, right? Deep down. I'm just
giving
him a hard time.
That's what we're
going
to lead with.
Hopefully he's listening. No, I love Johnny. He's a great guy, and you know, we've been through a lot together.
So you guys used to run the St. Paul Cash Spiel together.
Yeah, we ran it for with his previous wife Carrie, who's awesome as well. We ran that spiel for. We took it over from Kent Beadle. I don't remember the exact year, to be
Kent
honest.
Kent Beadle of the Beadle Breezer.
Beadle Breezer. Oh.
He's like one of the – you talk to Kent. We should get Kent on because he's interesting.
He is interesting.
He is like the most pro-USOC guy that you'll ever meet. Like
really?
I didn't know
that actually.
Yeah, like I was – like there was that when the Scots came to town or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was at St. Paul and I interviewed the Scottish dude and whatever and – I was talking to Kent, and he was like, I try to avoid all that because I just want to curl. You know, I don't really want to get into all that. But there was something going on, and he was talking to me, and he was like, yeah, he's like, people just don't understand, you know, the USOC, or not the USOC, USA Curling, not USOC.
Oh, yeah, USCA?
Yeah, USCA, yeah.
Well, so. I will tell you, Kent definitely, I know where he's coming from. He's right about that. The one problem... And I love St. Paul. I've been a lifetime member, you know, or whatever it's been.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yeah, 30-some years, right, in St. Paul. I also am a founding member of Blaine. I paid the $2,500 to be a lifetime member there. Also paid it for my daughter and my son, one of the small – or maybe it wasn't 25, maybe it was 1500. I can't remember, but whatever.
If you don't know, why don't you just say it was 5K?
Well, whatever it was. It was either 1500 or 2500, whatever
one
it was.
Stonecast,
yeah, I bought $500 for my son and my daughter who was playing at the time. We went the full membership amount. And, you know, so I love that both clubs. But Kent was one of the first people to – there was this – in St. Paul, there was this kind of – people didn't like the competitive scene. They didn't feel like it did anything for the club because it wasn't part of the club. Okay, you know, it wasn't to raise money for the club. It wasn't
we've heard some stuff about for sure.
And I don't mind saying it, being a longtime member. It's absolutely true. We did a lot for the club, but we didn't go maybe pound nails and fix things like that. But I brought in many new members to the club, friends of mine who played for a few years. We have done learn to curls. I've taught people how to curl. I'm out there practicing and next to someone, and it's not too often. Like if Tiger Woods is hitting balls, that you can just go to somebody that played at a world level or a national level and say, "Hey, what's wrong with my slide?" And
are you saying that you're?
I'm not. That was terrible. That is not. I'm not the Tiger Woods. That was terrible. Yeah. But I'm just giving you an example.
How about that Spieth? Maybe it'll be Spieth.
Yeah, Spieth, or maybe just somebody bad.
Mickelson,
you know, Seve Ballesteros, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that guy.
Whatever. But I'm just saying, like, it's not too often you can play. You know, John Schuster's throwing rocks, who is probably more the Tiger Woods, right? And he will come out and help someone figure out their slide. That just doesn't happen in any other sport, right? And when he is, when he and people like him, me and other people are willing to just do that. I helped some people with their slides in Blaine last weekend. You know, just, hey, let's.
When are you going to help me on my outturns?
Well, that's a lot of work. I don't think I have that much time, but we'll try. I'll definitely take you for a lesson. But no, seriously. And so when we started playing at this level and TV started getting involved and, you know, it was on the internet and all this, we still had this kind of sense at St. Paul that people weren't behind the competitive curlers, the board, the, you know, the people. And not that, and those guys are all my friends now, still to this day. And I think if they really admit it.
Except for Eric Ordway.
Yeah. If
I mean,
Eric's way too young to know this, but
careful.
But they would, it just wasn't like competitive curling mattered. You know, it doesn't matter. The club matters. But the reason that St. Paul went from 400, 500 members to 1,400 members, no question in the last 20 years, is because of Olympic curling. It's because of what the USCA did. It's because of the notoriety, being on TV, Schuster winning the gold right now. I mean, these clubs are packed. We can't even.
Stonecast is supported by our friends at the Once Upon a Crime Mystery Bookstore, 604 West 26th Street in Minneapolis. Not only do they have a fantastic collection of mysteries, thrillers, and crime novels, they host some of the best author events in the area. Check them out on the web at www.onceuponacrimebooks.com. That's www.onceuponacrimebooks.com.
I got to tell you this one Wilmer story. And you're going to probably have to separate this podcast into two podcasts because it's good. It's that good. But
I've been trying to.
I got a great Wilmert story for you. So we have this shot on sheet three for an eight ender. And on my first shot, I have to actually tick one of ours in and roll in and just kind of split it in, right? Even though they're laying one in the back, and I'm hoping, you know, hey, if I can tick this in, come off and roll under, maybe they'll draw whatever. They do draw. They're light. And my next shot is I've got to throw like a hack to back line waiter, tick off one of ours to get to one of theirs in the back 12 and knock it out for an eight. And if you played with Wilmer, you know that he's going to tell you, don't be light, don't be heavy, don't be wide, don't be narrow. He's going to talk to you the whole time you come down. And so my brother was in the house. This is back when my brother played. And Wilmert's the second. And I'm coming down the ice. And now everybody on all the sheets has come over to. So they're all standing on sheet four and they're all standing on sheet two.
No pressure.
Yeah. And they are because this is a big deal. You know, this is like a hole. It's harder than a hole in one in golf. No question about it. There's not even a question, you know. And I got to make not like a wide open hit. I got to actually tick one of mine without knocking it out to get around this other one to tick the back one. And Wilmert comes out, walking out past the hog line to meet me. And I say, don't say a f-ing word to me. Because I know he's going to say, don't be heavy, don't be light, don't be whatever, you know. And we talk about sports psychology. If I tell you right now, don't think about a purple elephant, no matter what you do, don't think about a purple elephant, you can't help but think about a purple elephant. And I use this in my practice in law to juries all the time. And so I didn't want him to say a word to me. And he just shut up and backed off. And I made the shot for the eight. And we got an eight-ender. And they swept the piss out of it all the way down. I'm screaming as loud as I ever have. And we got our eight-ender. And that's my only one after all the games I played. I had a way easier shot to make one, but missed that. And I was laying eight twice, but I didn't have the hammer. Right, so they knocked one out. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting story because, yeah, you know, I'm telling you, when people, the one thing in curling that if I can give, the best advice I can give is don't tell someone don't be heavy. Don't tell someone don't be light.
Yeah.
You can say it's okay to be a little bit light. It's okay to be a to make sure you're there.
So at the about a year ago, I think the New York Times or maybe the New Yorker published about sports technology. And apparently there's a broom company that has a sort of like a gyrator or something that it's giving you data based on the weight you put on the broom as well as the angle. And it will literally, like, over time, it will tell you based on your BMI and like what is your best sweeping approach. Okay, have you had any experience with brooms like that?
I do. So the USCA has a broom that measures the amount of, I believe it's how much pressure you put on the broom and how fast you move it, and it gets like a calculation.
It's probably the same
broom. And they had it at, so about 3 weeks ago, I helped out at a junior camp, and I taught some kids some strategy stuff and some things like that. I helped out for about 5 hours with Dave Jensen and some people from USCA Curling. And it was all kids about 16 to 19 or something like that, 14 to 19, something like that. And they had that broom there, and I've seen it before, and at the combines they have it. And this broom measures sweeping. And when I told you Colin Huffman was the best sweeper, my understanding is when they did the combine 4 years ago, there's whatever the measurement is, and I can't tell you how it works, but he had like 27,000, and the nearest person was 19,000. So the next nearest person, this is some of the best sweepers in the country. This is, you know.
Like passer rating for
curling. This is the guys that were in the, you know, that are on the best teams. This is Heath McCormick's team and John Schuster's team and people like that, right? And Colin is a third higher than everybody.
So it measures both force and...
Yeah, the amount of pressure.
And the speed?
And the speed.
Because Corey Dropkin's a pretty kick-ass curler.
Yeah, and Corey was probably the next highest or up there, close. But you know, there's this big argument in curling that you sweep... Do you sweep with a slider? There's very few people that, other than Ben Hebert, I would say, Corey Dropkin maybe... But I wouldn't put them in the same class because nothing against Corey. I love Corey. He's one of good friends of mine. But you, Ben Hebert sweeps with a slider, and Mark Kennedy, I think, does. Brett Gallant, I don't think, does. And there is a big argument in curling about can you put more pressure. I think it's a no-brainer argument that if you have two grippers on, you can lay more pressure on the broom.
They teach kids but to sweep.
The problem
to
is
with
when
the
you're
slider.
When you're
stupid.
Playing with Kevin Cooey, who throws
super fast,
the
yeah,
biggest bombs in history. You can't almost. You have to run to keep up with the rock if you have two grippers on versus a slider, and I think that's why Ben does it. And but you know, I think there's a big controversy in curling about that, and I don't think there's any question if you have, especially on a draw, if I need to make it go farther, I want two grippers on. My feeling, and I might be wrong on that. I'm not saying.
Oh, this is so controversial.
It is.
We're going to get letters. We're going to get letters.
You might.
Grippers, I would imagine, allow like a lower center of gravity. Because,
yes.
Like, the tipping point is you.
Yes.
Like, your feet are planted.
Your feet are planted with 70% of your weight on the broom, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I think when we did the measurements, people like Colin, who sweep with two grippers, are way higher than the next. Yeah. I mean, like, it wasn't even remotely close. And that's why, you know, Colin's one of my good friends, but there's no question he's one of the best. I mean, I've had so many people come up to me this year, like, I shot 5% higher because of Colin, you know, because he can sweep. That Phil can't. Phil's a great sweeper, too. So Phil and Colin together, it's insane how, like, I haven't had that kind of sweeping in my life. If I wish I did, and usually because I was probably sweeping and I'm not that good, you know, but I think two grippers makes a difference. That's my feeling.
What number were you?
Well, what do you mean? What number?
Like if Colin was 20,000.
Well, I didn't get tested because they refused to allow an old fat guy into the things. Data. Remember? Yeah. So I was. I think I would have been all right. I think I would have been all right.
They should test. They should do it. Bring those to like recreational leagues, and we should say like, okay, put a bottle of Jameson behind the ice.
I'll just say this: there are people that have been thought to be some of the best sweepers in curling. And then they take this broom, and they are way lower than other people who are not seen to be this, are not thought to be good sweepers. And it's the angle of the broom. It's double. I think it means a lot to have two grippers. If from what I've seen, the people with two grippers are higher than the people with a slider. And Corey. I played with him. He's one of the best sweepers in the country. No question. The dude's a freaking beast.
Yeah.
Like, I could tell you about the combine. I was embarrassed for me. What you got a guy doing, putting a 45-pound weight on his back and doing a plank for 6 minutes. Are you insane? And the rest of us are like a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Wow, planks are
he's doing.
Tough. Did you do the beep test?
He's doing. Oh, yeah. He's doing 66 push-ups in a minute. He's doing, or 68 or something like that. He's doing, 65 sit-ups in a minute, and the rest of us.
He's really
I mean, it's insane. The dude is ripped and unbelievable, but he's still a punk, and he knows it. But I'm telling you, two grippers makes a difference. That's all I'm going to say. You can agree or not agree with me, but
do you
when
think,
I
though,
see
you
Colin
don't know.
Sweep my rocks and I'm shooting freaking 90% most of the time, I'm not saying all the time, but like at Nationals and at Worlds is 86 and almost 90%.
Yeah.
Like,
as
come
the
on.
Person who
it's
judges
because
it.
Of him. I mean, I'm just saying it's not because of me. He's making my shots.
Yeah.
Did you send this data to your partners? Just say, hey.
Oh, yeah.
Just so you know.
Oh, yeah. I try to tell them, like, you know, just like I carry you in settlements every year, I carry teams in curling. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
No, you should be saying, T, you are the sweeper to my R. But do you know, like, if you're measuring the weight, like the pressure, is it necessarily just the pressure?
It's the speed, too.
Yeah, so speed. How do you know how much is like is the speed more applicable or the pressure?
I don't, you know what, that part I don't know, but
because you're just guessing.
I'm not a total geek about that kind of stuff. All I know is they have this machine that tells me, and I'm going to trust it. I don't.
Yeah,
know,
that's
like
your
a
problem.
It's like
as
a
soon
calculator.
As you start trusting the machines, they'll take over the world. I want to go back to the cash spiel.
Yes.
So you and Benton ran that for a long time.
Yeah, like 20 years, I think, or 15, 20 years. I don't know.
So Pete and Maureen are no longer running it. And so,
no, they're not? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they resigned, or not resigned, but they just decided not to run it. And so next year, Todd and Regan are going to run it.
Really?
With Carrie.
Awesome.
And they're going to
Carrie's so awesome. She still is involved in curling. She's great.
Yeah, and so they're going to run it, and it's going to be a lupus-themed cash spiel.
That's awesome. And Regan's fantastic. I mean, like, the money she's raised for lupus is insane. I did not know that was happening. And the problem with right now with us is we have to make a certain amount of points to qualify to be able to go to Worlds. And so we want to play in St. Paul because it's cheaper. And to be honest, my team has won it 3 of the last 5 or 6 years. So I want to play in St. Paul. You win $4,000, $5,000, whatever it is, and you get points. But if we're the only team with points in there, it's tough to go. And we have to decide, do we go to the Stu Cells in Toronto?
Yep.
So But I'm glad they're taking it over because I'm sure they're going to do a great job. But the problem for a team that's in the funding program is we have to have a certain amount of points to, or we can't go to Worlds, right?
Yeah.
So do we go to, you know, I would rather stay here. It's great. We
have How do they get more fight. Points?
More points.
You have to have more people.
Yeah, more good teams play, right? So yeah. If Schuster's there and we're there, that's enough to make it a good cash spiel.
The whole points thing is really interesting to me, or not that interesting, but listening to, like, I was talking to Maureen and Rick Pullman.
Yep.
And they were talking about, so Rick is involved in the international.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was some talk about getting the international on that whole points thing.
Yep.
A spiel like the international doesn't really qualify because there are too many there's too many non-points
team. And so, they're not legit.
Yeah,
you have to have the same team for a certain number of spiels. And if I play with you two and Colin, we're not eligible.
We're looking forward to that.
Okay, all right. Yep.
I'm skipping.
Well, we'll see about that.
Well, you play third, right?
Yeah, you'll play third.
Yeah, I'll play third.
Colin will throw a Colin. I'll play second.
Yeah.
Well, Colin's got a better takeout than you do. A little bit.
Just a tiny.
But I throw second.
I think we're stopped at Chris skipping. I think that's pretty much the death of us. But anyway, but no, you're right. There's a lot of great teams in the international.
Oh, you know what? This whole recording just got deleted.
there's a lot of really good teams in the international.
Yeah,
right.
It is
but,
a fun.
But they're not teams. They throw together. Even when I play in that, I usually play with. I might play with Colin, but I'll play with two of my buddies.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so
well, and people
and
are
Wilmert
like,
Wilmert wouldn't be one of those buddies.
and people are like, they're like, oh, let's go, you know, it's because it's got a big purse, right?
Right.
It's like, and it's a fun time,
right?
It's like, hey, let's put together a team and kick ass there and walk away with a nice check.
Monty Python,
yeah, European or whatever.
Yeah, I like love that. That was a great, that's my favorite movie of all time, by the way. Oh. Was it Jason?
Yeah,
great post, love it.
Yeah, and then there was another one after that that you answered.
Mine was, how does Rick balance curling with pull tabs?
Oh, well, you know, I do a lot of pull tabs when I'm not curling. That's about it. And while I'm curling, because at the Blaine Club, they have pull tabs. So
you should hammer post. It. Could you post a couple times on Facebook losses?
I did.
I just put in $400, and I didn't get – I got a call.
So the other night, I literally put in $40 and won $500 with a buddy of mine. I'm not kidding you. True story.
I don't believe it, but that's all right.
No, but I did post about a couple months ago. I lost a boatload, like $200-$300, you know.
You've curled in a great many clubs and venues over the years.
Yep.
What's your favorite place?
Favorite place? Wow. I've been in so many places.
I've been everywhere. Man, I've been everywhere.
Well,
I've been to Wichita. I've been to Blaine. I've been to.
I know you guys are giving me time to think, but wow, that's a great question. I probably played in 200-300 clubs. I know I'm a little bit biased saying this, but probably St. Paul, just because of the mystique and the number of people and how great curling is. And I know that's biased. If you were going to say outside Minnesota. When I went to Worlds in 2010, it was in Grand Forks, and we're at the Ralph Engelstad. And even though I don't agree with what he stands for, I'll just be honest with the podcast on that. Awesome. And those of you who know him, I hope you don't agree with him either. That arena is unfrickin' believable. And we got to play Worlds in there, and it was insane. And we had several thousand people cheering us on because the Canadians back then knew we sucked, and they would cheer for us, right? Unless we're playing them. They were our biggest fans, and we had 5,000 people cheering for us. And that arena was phenomenal. It was unbelievable, like the bar on the end. And I don't know. I'd say that's not really a club. So I – You know, it's not a club, but it was phenomenal. So, and it was probably one of the top, you know, 10 moments of my life being in the Worlds, right?
Quick follow-up question of my own. You ever done like a 2-3 sheet like barn bond spiel in the Midwest? Just like we're going to throw ice down inside this Quonset hut for
No, I
There's a
I,
lot of those in Wisconsin. And
I haven't
super
but,
fun.
But I'll tell you this, so probably the best Kwanzaa type hut I've been in is Stevens, Minnesota. So it's up by North Dakota, Winnipeg, you know, like right on the border, like right before the border, you take a right and you go off of 29, which is in North Dakota, and you go back into Minnesota. And I can't remember the name of the family there, but there were a bunch of farmers. And there was this old dude that would hand scrape the ice. And it was the best ice at that time that I had ever played on. It was phenomenal. It was a two-sheet club with a little Kwanzaa hut. Mm-hmm. And the ice was phenomenal. It was probably back, we're talking 20 years ago, and it was 24, 25 seconds, you know, phenomenal ice. And I remember one of my players had a rock pick, and during practice, and he just pulled it up by the hog line and looked at it, what was underneath. And, you know, when you pull a rock up, you sometimes leave a little white mark. And the little old dude came running out and he was like, "What the hell are you doing? You don't lift up rocks on the ice. You lift them up behind." And he was going crazy. And it was awesome because he just took so care of his, I mean, so he was, the ice was so important to him. And it was the best ice I've ever seen at that level at that time, which is 20 years ago. Awesome. So anyway, that so is, I would say I love
shout
Steven.
Shout out to Steven.
Let's go there. Let's go there. All right. I've seen over the last couple years some horrendous head injuries at the curling club.
Yep.
That's true.
And, I've seen some really bad. Yeah. Like, I've got something happened in front of me that there was spurting blood.
Yeah, it's
and
bad.
Driving to the curling club, sometimes I have flashbacks about it.
Yeah, sure.
What kind of liability does the curling club have? I know you signed some sort of waiver.
So it's interesting that you should say this because this is right up my alley. I was on the MAJ committee that made the decision to try to pass a law because what was happening is people were signing these waivers without knowing what was going on. And people – I'll give you an example. We had a case where there was some people at a baseball that had dropped their kids off for baseball camp, right? Mm-hmm. So if you slide into second and you break your leg, that's fine. You shouldn't be able to bring a claim against somebody. But if some guy comes off the is driving by and people aren't supervising him and he grabs one of the kids and sexually molests them and kills them, that probably shouldn't have happened because if the people who are watching them were standing there, it wouldn't have happened. Or in this other case, the same thing at a baseball camp, they're throwing those little wood chips at each other because the adults were inside talking about what they're going to do in the afternoon and it was lunch break, blinds a kid. If you were there, you wouldn't have let these kids throw these things at each other. And it has nothing to do with baseball. If it has something to do with baseball, fine.
Yeah, hit by a pitch.
Hit by a pitch, slide in a second, break your ankle. No problem.
Back to baseball, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird how that happens, right? but so we there was too many of these waivers that were waiving everything. They would waive intentional acts. So if one of the teachers went and raped a kid, you wouldn't be liable because it was an intentional act, even though you should have known that you hired this teacher who has 17 sexual assault convictions on kids, right? It's bullshit. That's bullshit, right? So I was on the legislative chair and I testified on this, but it was about 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And we changed the law to say it, and we tried to get it to say that it had to be germane to the activity. So in other words, if you're doing baseball and you slide in a second, you can't sue. But if they are doing a wood chip fight or they are getting raped or something like that, you can sue. And it ended up being that the only way we could get it passed through the Republican legislature was to say gross negligent or more than ordinary negligence or greater than ordinary negligence. Yeah.
That's just ordinary negligence.
Yeah. It can't be just ordinary negligence. It has to be greater than ordinary negligence. So it has to be something beyond.
Yeah. Whereas you're watching six kids, but you got to go pee.
Yeah. That's that would be okay.
Normal. That's
but
normal.
But if you're, if you walk away cause you got to go smoke a joint, that's probably
Or you're going to go to a movie,
right?
I'm really interested in how you're going to get this back to someone falling on the curling ice.
No, so that's what I'm saying. So, but in curling ice, it's expected. It's part. It's germane to the activity. If you're on ice, there is a good chance you're going to fall. And if you want to wear a helmet, you have the right to wear a helmet, right? Mm-hmm. And you know when you go in there that you're on ice, you have to wear the right shoes. You have to have shoes that aren't super slippery. You have never been on the ice. You have to know what's going on. And so it's germane to the activity. I don't think curling clubs have a responsibility. Now, if they serve someone till they're 0.24 and then let them go out on the ice, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay? Because they have now you have a dram shop claim.
Ruby, my daughter, she's into rock climbing.
Mm-hmm.
She goes to Vertical Endeavors.
Yep.
And
you have to sign one of those.
Yeah. And I read it. Because mm-hmm. I read those things. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do it. But I was like, I had to pick her up. And I go, you know, so I had to read this thing. And there was an exclusion for even gross negligence. And I was like, I asked the guy. I said, what? Yeah. Why do I have to sign this thing that says that if you guys, like, intentionally screw up.
Yep.
And he told me, he said, well, that's why we don't let our staff belay any of the, we always have other students do all the belaying.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, great. I'm like, so you don't even help them. Like, it's like the kids have to. And I was like, oh.
Like, think about that. Like is that like what it. You really want?
Yeah. Like, we would like a third-party vendor, but we don't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
So we're going to subsidize the other paying kids.
It's unbelievable when you think about what you have to deal with on those things, and you're just like, well, wait a sec. You should be clipping on these people, making sure they're not going to fall, right? That's your job as a person. And if you don't train them right.
The coaches do that. But when the way he said that, I was like, one, it's like, why do I have to sign something that apparently signs away my rights to gross negligence?
Which they can't do, by the way. It's illegal for them to do that. I assume that they couldn't. But if they do that and your child gets hurt, let's say we had 20 kids that got hurt, or 20 parents walk away and don't sue out of 22, right?
Yeah.
They do that because they think you might walk away.
Yeah.
And it works with a lot of people. They just deny their claim, deny. Yeah. And if they don't hire a lawyer,
well, I know
like
who
me,
I would call.
Yeah, we'd call. Yeah. It's TSR time.
I told Rich this one time. This is sad, but Ruby and I were driving on 94.
Yep.
And there was this big motorcycle accident right in front of us. And Ruby, she was probably 6 or 7. She said, that guy should call those people from TSR from the billboards.
Ah, that's what I like. I love Ruby. I love Ruby.
Who came up with the slogan? Like,
that's an interesting story. We were sitting in my office now. It was Steve's office at the time. And, you know, a lot of people think that you have to hire people to do that kind of stuff and figure that out. But we had, you know, done the thought about, oh, you know, 1-800-1888 cars for kids, and we got to figure, you know,
the auto tune,
you know, 1-800 ask Gary,
which is like, I hear that and I turn the channel.
Yeah, I know. So we were thinking, Jesus, what can we do? What can we do? And we're like, we had just changed our name to TSR, and I said it. Steve will argue with you that he said it first, but we both said, I don't know. It sounds kind of corny, TSR time. But we came up with, because it was seven digits, and we're like, okay. We immediately called the phone company. This is at like 9 o'clock at night, because we had been working on marketing, and I had just started with them in 2009. And he said, what do you think about, you know, what do we think about TSR time? 612, it's TSR time. You're hurting in an accident, it's TSR time. And it was crazy, because I said, well, I don't like it, I don't think, but I kind of do. And so we said, let's go talk to all of our friends this weekend. This was on, I think, a Thursday night. And we said, let's talk to all our friends and see what you think. And see what they think. And I went to like 6 or 8 people that I know. I was calling people, and they're like, it's awesome. And I thought it was kind of like, because we get biased memorable. A little bit. Right? We get biased a little bit about, we don't want to be corny. We don't want to be one of those guys that, get us money right now. We will get you money right now. Just call us today. Right? Yeah. So we were.
You don't want to be the general.
Right. Girl. Exactly. And so I talked to all these people. We come back on Monday, and Chuck and Steve both said to me, everybody loves it. And then we went with it right then. And I'll tell you right now, we've had people saying, you know, I was drunk and I was sitting around a fire and my buddy almost fell in. And we went, oh, that would have been TSR time. Can you send us some shirts? So we send shirts out. We send, you know. And so when people get in accidents now, it's becoming kind of this thing like, oh, it's TSR time. We're in an accident. That's TSR awesome. Time. And it's been the greatest marketing hashtag. Thing we've ever said. I know. Time. Oh, yeah. It's hashtag TSR. It's 612 TSR time. Everybody knows you get in an accident. It's TSR time.
Rich, thank you for joining our podcast. It's been very interesting. You've given us a lot of information, both on the record and off the record. I feel like all our future podcasts will have a lot of deep intelligence that we can bring.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
It's been a great pleasure.
Yep.
Thank you.
Cheers. Sláinte. Bye.
There's a man they call the skipper, fast asleep, dreaming of gold.